Hello, Cleveland. Yes, it is us. We have returned. Welcome to the Dogland Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Jokey. It has been quite a while since we talked to you last. Our schedules haven't lined up. We've both gotten sick. We'll try our best to get through this podcast without coughing in everybody's ears for 30 minutes or so. But Jack, man, how we doing? It's good to have you back and good to talk to you.
Yeah, man, it's good to talk to you. I know the last few weeks have been rough for the both of us. You know, we tried to make things happen, but I was sick and then you got sick and then our schedules didn't go right. And obviously there was a holiday thrown in that as well. But yeah, it's good to talk to you, man. And a lot has happened in the last few weeks since we last spoke, which was when the Browns beat the Steelers. Obviously this team, a lot of twists and turns have happened, but here we are, we're back, and the Browns are still standing tall in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, it's kind of like we jumped into some weird time capsule, and you know, over the last 2 weeks, because Joe Flacco started a game yesterday and won a game as a Cleveland Browns quarterback, which is just completely insane to think about because of where we started the season and how we've gotten to this point. But it's just been quite a wild ride. You're right about the AFC playoff picture. You know, the Browns are the leader of the pack in terms of the wild card position at the moment. You know, they're sitting right there behind all the division leaders, but they're ahead of quite a few teams in the wild card spot right now, that fifth seed in the AFC. But Jack, the crazy thing, and I mentioned here, you know, over the last 2 weeks, Joe Flacco has started for the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, this is something, if you would have said like 5 years ago, or I guess even at the beginning of the season, that Flacco has started, you know, a game for the Browns, the fourth different quarterback to win a game for Cleveland this year. This has been just unbelievable season in every different aspect in terms of injuries, you know, exciting wins, you know, close losses. But to have Flacco come in and win a game as a Browns starting quarterback on Sunday, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to some coworkers the last couple days, and it was like, who would ever thought that Joe Flacco was going to put on a Browns uniform, lead us to a win in Browns Stadium, where he haunted us for so long when he was the quarterback of the Ravens, and he's leading this Browns team. The Browns have embraced him. He, if anybody hadn't heard the post-game speech on Sunday, he was like, thanks for letting me feel like a kid again and just getting, be able to toss the ball around and having fun and, you know, helping lead the Browns to win. Like, it's unbelievable, you know, to have four starting quarterbacks this year, everything that's happened with this team, and each one of those starting quarterbacks have won. We're the first team since the 2015 Houston Texans to do that. And lo and behold, it's Joe Flacco, former Super Bowl MVP. One time was one of the elite quarterbacks in the league, used to torture the Browns for over a decade. And now he's helping the Browns stay in the playoff hunt and potentially take the Browns to the playoffs for, you know, the second time in 4 years. Like, it's still so surreal watching Flacco, watching this fan base in this town rally behind him, watching the national media now gush over the Browns and the way Flacco has come in off the street and lead. That's a whole nother discussion for another time, but it is unbelievable to see what has happened so much with this team. And even the new news we've gotten over the last 48 hours or so since the win on Sunday, more twists and turns to the team. But I just feel like no matter what's been thrown at this franchise this year, they've always shook it off, stepped up to the plate essentially, and just shake it off and keep doing their thing. And this is probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Brown seasons as a fan, just seeing everything that's happened and they're still standing tall in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, because we've experienced this, you know, how many times over the last, you know, 20 plus years, you know, since they came back. With what it all has happened this season, you know, you expect them to be like 2-15, 3-14 and things to completely fall apart. But for some reason this year, Jack, things are completely different around here. And I think it's a huge credit to Stefanski, and we'll talk about him a little bit later, but Andrew Berry and just the way the whole coaching staff and the front office has, you know, pieced this whole thing together, and it is still working. And it seems like the leadership on this team, you know, from the locker room to the front office, it's truly is different than it's ever been, because so many times, you know, it's December right now, and we've joked about December Berea and how things can get around here. And right now it's just 100% a complete turnaround from what it normally is when all these different things happen to the Browns. So to be in a position that they are in right now, to still have the potential to make the playoffs with all of the injuries, which we'll talk about, to be on your fourth quarterback, to, you know, sign Joe Flacco and him go out there and lead us, to be in a position where, you know, you win 2-4, 3-4 over these last four games, you're probably going to be in the postseason. And to make the playoffs might be one of the best coaching jobs we've ever seen here in Cleveland.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so much that's been said about Kevin Stefanski and the front office and the way they've constructed the roster. You could talk about some of the positions and how they really haven't addressed them to their best ability. And then, you know, people knock on Stefanski's play calling every week, saying we don't run enough. Why are we throwing so much? The case in point this past Sunday, which we'll get to. But I think Stefanski's done an admirable job. Andrew Berry has done an admirable job. You know, Jim Schwartz, last few weeks haven't been very good. He's done a great job with this defense. Bill Callahan, which now it's really going to become a remarkable job if he can pull off what he has to do now down the stretch with some of the news that came out today, in the last few days. But this coaching staff has done a great job. The front office has added pieces to this roster to keep this thing going. We talked about being all in during the preseason and training camp and everything. And, you know, they've made moves to show, even during the season, bringing veterans in and saying, we know what's at stake here. We know how talented this team is. We're not packing it in just because, you know, certain things have gone wrong, especially on the injury front. This is one of the best stories in the league right now. Like, Kevin Stefanski's not getting enough love for Coach of the Year. He should start getting plenty of it just because of what they've had to go, what they've gone through with all the injuries and everything. This is an A-plus effort, I think, by everybody, because, you know, every time a new injury flares up, Anthony, people are, you know, there's that sorrow. But I tweeted it, I think, Tuesday morning. I was like, next man up. I said, this team hasn't quit yet. They rise to the challenge and they keep going. Like, and I think that's the mentality that the coaching staff and the front office have. Like, just because these injuries have happened and they've been devastating ones, this team's not quitting yet. And I think that's the Cleveland way. And I think they know that, and they keep showing it every Sunday, despite every obstacle that's been thrown at them.
Yeah. This has the, you know, the makings of, you know, it's kind of been a special season already. And I think it's just going to continue to be that way, especially if they get into the playoffs. You never know what happens at that point. But just the way everything has gone this year has gone against them in terms of injuries and whatnot. You're right. There has been zero quit from this team, and that starts from up top. And, you know, just what Stefanski has been able to do. It's funny how the whole narrative about the Browns in the media, especially the national media, has changed over the last couple of weeks. But it's certainly interesting to watch, and we just along for the ride. You know, there's certainly been no quit in Browns fans over the years. You know, there's been plenty of opportunities to be able to do that, and for the team to stand up and continue on with everything that has gone on this season, it really is a special thing, you know, that we're watching this year. And, you know, there's obviously the ultimate dream, and you know, it is just a dream, but I think that just these last 4 weeks of the regular season still can be pretty special, and there's certainly an opportunity there to win all of these ball games. There's no doubt that they'll be in them. And they'll definitely have a chance to win some of these. So look, if we get to the playoffs, I think it'll be one of the most fun seasons, you know, despite everything that's gone on, that the Browns have ever had.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, they're one game up. They're the top wild card team right now. They have one game advantage over Indy, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Denver. There's another team and I can't put my finger on it right now, but we knew the AFC was going to be tough this year, Anthony, and it definitely is. It's a good thing we have one game up. It's a good thing we have some of these tiebreakers, beating the Colts, beating Pittsburgh, at least splitting that. I don't know how the tiebreaker works then in that situation, but you know, the fact that we're winning the games in the AFC, we're 3-2 in the division, which is the same record as Baltimore. So if Baltimore slips up here in the next couple of weeks, that could play into our hand when it comes to the division title. Potentially, we're two games behind them. So I would say Baltimore, who's really clicking offensively, I think they got the division, barring an epic collapse. But we're in the driver's seat now. I think we have an 85% chance to make the playoffs, but you still got to go out there and take care of business. You have a tough game this coming week against the Bears. Houston is going to be tough. Granted, how CJ Stroud goes through the concussion protocol. The Jets have a tough defense. We may see Aaron Rodgers, but Zach Wilson just put together a great performance against the Jets. So, or against the Texans. So that's going to be a tough one. And then Cincinnati's really coming along. Jake Browning, they're the other 7-6 team now that I've just thought about it. He's starting to put it together. Kudos to the, you know, Bengals coaching staff. I know I made that tweet disrespecting Zach Taylor, but he's done a good job with Jake Browning and picking up the pieces after the Joe Burrow injury. So it's not going to be, you know, I love Browns fans are going to say we got easy wins down the stretch. It's not going to be easy late in December when you're playing a couple teams that are in the playoff hunt. It's going to be a fight all the way down to week 18, that last game against Cincinnati. You know, I'm glad we got a game up on everybody because, you know, that does give us some cushion, but we still got to go out there and execute and take care of business in order for the Browns to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at Baltimore's last four games at Jacksonville, at San Francisco, home against the Dolphins, home against the Steelers. So there's an outside chance there, based on what schedule they have left. So it could get very interesting around here. We'll just stick with that.
But let's
talk about the game because, you know, the Browns did beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 31-27. Joe Flacco threw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns and, three touchdowns. And, you know, it was just a special thing to watch. And there was a connection early on in the game in the first half. Flacco threw two touchdowns to David Njoku, who I was talking to my one friend after the game, and how long did Joe Flacco torture us with that tight end connection to Todd Heap? And so now it's kind of nice to see him build that relationship with David Njoku, who, you know, is a much better athlete than Heap, you know, ever was. And, you know, this is something down the line here, Jack, that could really be something special, the connection that these two could build.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, right out of the gate, you know, that opening drive, Flacco. I just want to say the opening drive, it was nice to seeing the Browns offense get back to what it was the last couple years with Stefanski, where our opening drive, we were going down and putting touchdowns on the board. Last year, we did it with Jacoby. Several times with Baker, we did it. It was very inconsistent with Deshaun, PJ Walker, DTR. But seeing 2 weeks in a row, the opening drive, Flacco take the offense down the field and put a touchdown on the board was huge. But seeing the connection, like you said, with David Njoku, who's on pace to have a career year, he's already set his career high in receptions. He's really close in receiving yards, and he's matched his career high with four touchdowns. He's done that five of the seven seasons he's been with the Browns. it's great to see that connection there. Njoku is, he's starting to finally put it all together as a tight end. We know he's developed so well as a blocker under Stefanski, and now he's really starting to put it together as a receiver. We know the year that he's had both on and off the field. You know, the drops tend to flare up every now and again, but seeing Njoku have that chemistry with Flacco, he's had it with pretty much every quarterback. It's been like the security blanket for the starting quarterbacks this season, but that first quarter or the first half for Njoku, I thought he was about to have a career game. Defense has kind of honed in on him in the second half. Jacksonville did, but to see that connection clicking as well as it did in the opening drive and later on in the second quarter, it was great to see. Finally seeing Njoku play to his true potential. It took 7 years, Anthony, but we're finally starting to see the Chief finally rise up.
Yeah, it's definitely a special thing to see the Chief, you know, have a very good game. And, you know, the third touchdown pass, I think, might have been the best one of the day, because of all people, the Jacksonville Jaguars just completely lost track of David Bell, and there was no one within 15 yards of him when he caught that football and ran into the end zone on 4th and 3, mind you, in a very critical position in the game in the second half there. You know, the Browns go for it on 4th down. They go back up by 14 points, you know, after Jacksonville had you know, made it 21-14. And I think that one, to see David Bell finally get that first touchdown, you know, something that us as fans have been, you know, looking for since they drafted him last year. And, you know, we've been wondering if he's just going to get kind of lost in the fold with all these different Browns receivers. But here he is, a huge critical touchdown catch and run that he had in the game on Sunday. And it was nice to see David Bell get into the end zone.
Yeah, it was such a crazy play. He was lined up. There was three receivers to the right. He was one of them. And all of a sudden, one of Jacksonville's linebackers falls over, and you know, Bell caught it and just took off. And I think even if the linebacker wouldn't have slipped, I think Bell's still going to go, because there was nobody in the vicinity besides that linebacker. And I think Bell's fast enough to outrun a linebacker. I forget which one it was, but to see David Bell get that, and everybody's seen the images of him smiling because he's gone through a lot in his first 2 years here. Obviously, he's buried down on the depth chart. Who knows what his future is here, at least, but to see him have that moment, he obviously got down on one knee and pointed to the heavens. It was great. And obviously it was such a critical, gutsy play call. And, you know, obviously the other image in everybody's mind is Stefanski jumping and running down the sideline. This is a whole new Stefanski we've seen this year, Anthony, showing emotion, you know, overcome with joy when his play call, his decision making pays off. And it was a gutsy call, like you said, but the fact that it went out, it was executed, and for once none of the Stefanski haters could say anything about it. And I think I don't remember if I tweeted it or I posted to somebody the major league gif of Pedro Serrano, the big balls gif. I sent it to one of the Stefanski haters, because everybody was always trashing him, and it was that final moment, like, see, when it's executed, Stefanski knows what the hell he's doing. And it was great to see David Bell get that moment finally.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that play call, about going for it at that situation. You know, they were where were they at? They were on the 41-yard line, and you know, I thought that they might have, you know, been just trying to draw them off sides, and you know, they you know, take the penalty and put the ball away. But Stefanski decides to go for it, and they get the wide open touchdown. You know, how do we feel about that play call? Because, you know, that was a critical time in the game where, you know, Jacksonville has gotten some momentum, you know, in the game, kind of made it close. You know, the Browns get this touchdown to go back up by 2 scores. But, you know, how do we feel about that play call? And not only that one, just the play calling in general, because you're right. It's been a much discussed topic over the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or so, if not all season. And I just feel like the longer the season goes on, you know, Stefanski has continued to push the right buttons at the right time. And that touchdown pass on fourth down and three to David Bell was definitely another right button at the right time.
It seemed like when it originally happened, I thought he was trying to get Jacksonville to jump off sides. And then when he snapped it, I was kind of like, man, I hope this goes well. And all of a sudden you see Bell catch it, the linebacker fall over, and Bell takes off and scores. So it was like, okay, gutsy play call. It was executed. It worked. We scored a touchdown. As far as the whole Stefanski thing, I know a lot of people have been complaining about, you know, them not running the ball enough. I think Sunday it was, they threw 45 times, but they only ran 24 times. I will say this, you know, the running game hasn't been as effective the last several weeks. They've only, in the last four games, they've only hit 100 rushing yards one time. It was against Denver. I just don't think they're efficiently running the ball well enough. I know a lot of people look at the box score and say, well, Jerome Ford's averaging 4 yards a carry, but if you take away his longest run, which was 26 yards on Sunday, it's 12 carries for 25 yards. That's 2.5 yards per carry. Kareem Hunt's averaging 2.7 yards per carry. They may have some explosive runs, but in all, they're not efficiently running the ball enough. So unfortunately, they're going to keep throwing the football until the running game gets going. It might not get going the rest of the year because of the injuries to the offensive line. Betonio hasn't been at his best. Posick's been hurt. Teller's actually been the strongest offensive lineman of the entire year and the most consistent one. The running game's not been there since Chubb's got hurt. Well, not since Chubb's got hurt, but the last several weeks it hasn't been there. So unfortunately, they're going to throw the ball 40 to 50 times with Flacco, or they've had to do it with DTR. Just the running game hasn't been there, so they're going to have to sling the ball around. But this is kind of what the NFL is. At the same time, Trevor Lawrence threw the ball 50 times because Travis Etienne couldn't get going in the run game. So what do? You throw the ball. So I think Stefanski's been calling good games. I feel like the offense has been a lot smoother the last couple of weeks under Flacco. Is that an indictment on the mobile quarterbacks we've had? Deshaun, DTR, PJ Walker? It could be, because we've seen it and the track record proves it, Anthony. Stefanski executes Stefanski's offense is executed better with a pocket passing type quarterback. Case Keenum, Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield, Jacoby Brissett, and now Joe Flacco. And that's not, you know, that's also an indictment on Stefanski, because he hasn't been able to make his offense work with the mobile quarterbacks like Deshaun and DTR. So that's going to be a whole different topic in the offseason, is how is Stefanski going to make this offense work for Deshaun, because Deshaun's here. Flacco might not be here, barring some miracle ride here down the stretch. But I have no problem with the way Stefanski's been operating this offense, because it's been working. The stats speak for itself. They're scoring-wise, they're top half offense in the league. So I know some people are going to gripe about some of the way the play calling is, the flow of a game, but the stats back it up. The offense is clicking right now with Flacco, and if they're going to keep throwing the ball 40 to 50 times, if he keeps putting touchdowns on the board and lessens the turnovers, this is going to be success for the Cleveland Browns.
And there's going to be a time where they have to run the football, and they're going to have to dig down deep to be able to do that, because you're right, with all the different injuries among the offensive line that they have sustained this year, obviously not having Nick Chubb, they're going to have to find a way to run the football at some critical times. And I'm not sure if they're going to have to get creative in that aspect or what they're going to have to do. But if Flacco does continue to play well and throw the football well, that should open up some running lanes for Jerome Ford, among others as well. So hopefully it's that, you know, Flacco can maintain what he's been doing these first couple of weeks, you know, with the Browns, and they'll be able to get some running game going at some point.
We'll say, if they want to find a way to get this all the running game going, it's been reported at the OBR that they want to get Pierre Strong more involved. If Jerome Ford's not getting it done, Give Pierre Strong more touches. We have seen when he's been able to run the ball, all the other times he's been just dropped at the line of scrimmage. He's got speed. He's been able to make cuts and be more shifty and more elusive than Jerome Ford. I think Jerome's getting there in terms of a runner, but I just don't think his vision's fully there yet. I also don't think he has the speed like a Pierre Strong. So if they can find ways to get Pierre Strong the ball, because we've seen it in, I think it was the Seattle game when he got touches, he was effective. You know, he had the 41-yard screen pass. He averaged 4.1 yards per carry on 10 carries against Seattle. I think you have to find ways to get him the ball just because I think he brings something that Jerome Ford doesn't. And if Jerome Ford continues to struggle, and, you know, obviously he has that explosive play in him. We've seen it numerous times this season. I just think you need to find a happy medium to where you can find ways to get Strong in there as well, because we know what Kareem brings down in the goal line. He's got to be that guy when it's, you know, first and goal. I think he's that power back that can power his way into the end zone like he's done this season. But there's got to be some kind of happy medium balance between Ford and Strong to where they can each get touches, I think, to get that running game going.
Yeah, they need to figure out something because, you know, just the running game definitely has been lacking, and we'll see over these next couple weeks here if that's something that could get back on track or not. Let's flip sides here and talk about the defense, because, you know, the defense did give up 27 points, but, you know, much talk this year has been about the lack of forcing turnovers, and the Browns forced quite a few turnovers on Sunday, including two interceptions by MJ Emerson in this game. And, you know, without having Denzel Ward out there, you know, MJ has certainly stepped up, you know, even more so than Newsom. And I think that MJ might have been the defensive MVP from the game on Sunday.
Oh, without a doubt. He made two unbelievable interceptions. He was all over you know, the wide receivers for Jacksonville. I thought he was making great plays. He has been an outstanding corner for the Browns, and he just continues to impress. He's got four interceptions this year, which I think is towards the top in the NFL. I think he definitely leads the team. He's actually fourth in the NFL in interceptions. So I know, you know, the Pro Bowl games are coming up. A lot of, you know, the voting's out there. I'm not a big Pro Bowl person just because it's become a meaningless event, but, you know, it does help players in terms of contract talks and everything. So Emerson has just continued to impress. He's racking up the interceptions now. He was very impressive on Sunday, as well as the other corner we'll talk about, Greg Newsom.
Yeah, you know, like I mentioned, you know, Greg has also stepped up without having Denzel Ward out there. And, you know, when you have one good corner, it's a very good thing to have, but the Browns have three. And, you know, the last couple of weeks has been a little bit rough, but I think that the secondary got back on track on Sunday. And to see the game that MJ played, to see the game that Greg Newsom played, you know, hopefully we welcome back Denzel Ward this Sunday against the Bears, because against DJ Moore, you're probably going to need it a little bit.
Definitely.
So, you know, hopefully, you know, he can return, but if not, you know, I think that Newsom and MJ Emerson, after a game like they had against Jacksonville, all the confidence in the world is there. And, you know, you heard Newsom talk a little bit after the game about, you know, how he was playing for Denzel Ward and whatnot. And, you know, I think that these two guys especially are pretty motivated because they hear, you know, all the talk that Denzel Ward gets. And these guys, Newsom and Emerson, are playing at such a good level that, you know, maybe they could enter that conversation here if they can continue to piece together good game after good game.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody was bummed when Denzel was ruled out Sunday morning when the inactives came out. But, you know, you feel good because you have Martin Emerson, who is a star in the making at corner. Greg Newsom obviously has had his ups and downs this year, but he played really well on Sunday with an interception and four pass breakups. He was also tackling well, which I think has been a downside to Newsom's game the first few years. And obviously, like, Newsom's going to play his heart out because he's trying to get that payday, which he's eligible for after this season. But he's playing well. And it's also good, Anthony, when, you know, despite the injuries in the secondary, you talk about Denzel Ward, Juan Thornhill was a scratch, like right at kickoff with a calf injury. So you're in a situation where you have to play Ronnie Hickman, who's an undrafted rookie this year. You're playing De'Anthony Bell, who was an undrafted rookie last year out of a D2 school. You're playing those guys. You're playing Cam Mitchell, who's a fifth-round pick this year. Khalif Halassi, who the Browns picked up during roster cuts from Kansas City. I think he was undrafted, or he was a day-three pick, maybe a seventh-rounder. And everybody played well. And that's been, like, the theme of the Browns this season when, you know, these injuries have happened to our, you know, our high profile guys, our superstars, and everybody steps up. You know, Mike Ford is just a special teams ace and he's had to step in. He hasn't played well, but he's also had some great moments. The interception again on Lamar Jackson in the Baltimore game, like this whole secondary stepped up when an injury happens. You know, Grant Delpit gets hurt in the game on Sunday. And look, you know, Hickman and Bell stepped up and played well. Like, you know, McLeod's been out, like all these injuries have happened, but these guys in the secondary just keep stepping up and making plays. And that's encouraging because that just shows that Andrew Berry is doing a good job at scouring the waiver wire, or when it comes to his scouting department for the draft, like they're finding these guys and they step up and answer the call when their number is called and they go out there and make a play.
This is why when we talk about roster cutdowns at the end of training camp, this is why it's a good thing when talking about the guys that are 48 to 53 on this roster is a very hard decision for reasons like this, when there's injuries and the Browns have had their fair share this year. But the way that the back end of this roster has really been able to step up, whether it be offensive line, whether it be secondary, whether it be running back, whatnot, the way that the back end of this roster has been extremely important to the Browns this season, you know, this is the product of having a very good team. And just the way that these guys have been able to step up really shows how well that Andrew Berry has been able to put this team together. Because when you have guys that are talented from the first spot on the roster to the last spot on the roster, and they're able to step up in these types of situations, that's, you know, when on, that's when you know that you have a good thing put together here. And, you know, they've been very lucky that things have been able to go their way this year in terms of, you know, the back end of the roster really playing well when called upon. And unfortunately, it's been a lot, but they will continue to be able to do so for the rest of the season here. They're going to have to. And, you know, I know it's been getting a little bit thinner, that back end, you know, because these guys, they've had to bring in some guys to take over those last few spots with the amount of people that have gone on to IR. But just the back end of this roster this season has been so crucial for the Browns' success. And we're lucky that they're in a good position to do so.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think, you know, I mentioned, you know, the front office for how they've been able to find talent and bring it in, whether it's, you know, veterans that are street free agents or taking chances on guys on the practice squad or undrafted guys. But credit goes to the coaching staff as well. I mean, we talked about whether it's Bill Callahan on the offensive line, Jim Schwartz and his staff on the defensive side, they have gotten guys ready. And when their number's called, they go out there and execute and do their job. And, you know, same goes for special teams, which we definitely need to talk about next, Anthony. But Bubba Ventrone has done a great job. You know, James Prochet comes in as a street free agent, steps into the kick return role. Obviously, when things weren't going well and when Donovan Peoples-Jones got traded, he's gotten guys ready and they've come in and they've contributed on special teams. I think our coverage units have been so much better. Obviously, we'll talk about the kicking and punting game. But all in all, this coaching staff has done a great job. And, you know, obviously that starts with the man up top, Kevin Stefanski. Like, he's gotten his guys on his staff ready and all the position coaches. have done their job to make sure that their players are ready. And this is obviously a big turnaround from what happened last year. Because if we would have still had Joe Woods and Mike Prefer, who knows where this team would be? They probably would not be 8-5, and they probably would not be in the middle of a playoff race. Even though they were close last year, I don't think it would have been any close or as close this year if we still had the same guys in their previous coordinator roles, for sure.
Yeah, you know, if we still had Kay York, thankfully, you know, we have Dustin Hopkins, who on Sunday set the Browns' single season record for field goals made. And it was a huge one, too, because, you know, he makes that field goal. Was it 54 yards, I believe? And you know, not so great conditions. You know, it's hard to kick in that stadium, but he makes that field goal and it puts the Browns up 31-21 at that moment. And
that's a real quick, that's another record he set. His 8th 50 yard field goal broke Phil Dawson's 2012 record of 7. So he set 2 records on Sunday.
That's just crazy. Especially doing it at Brown Stadium too, which is not an easy place to kick by any means. Nope. But you know, the way that they've been able to make these field goals when needed and to go up 10 there at the very crucial moment, because Jacksonville came right back down and scored 9 plays, 75 yards in only a minute 37. And, you know, they decided to go for 2 to, you know, because if they got the onside kick that, you know, they could have kicked a field goal and potentially won the game there. That kick was huge. If they don't make that kick, you know, Jacksonville probably goes down, probably, you know, just goes, you know, for the extra point to tie the game up at 28. But instead the Browns make that field goal, and you know, that was kind of the dagger. You know, they still had to finish the game out, but to be able to make that field goal, because it would have given Jacksonville really good field position as well. So it's been very talk about things that we're thankful for during this holiday season, Dustin Hopkins definitely at the top of that list.
Yeah, I mean, that's the trade that keeps on giving. If he's not first-team All-Pro kicker this year, I'm really going to question who votes for that, because he has been the best kicker in the league. He's setting franchise records. There's another record that is looming for him. I had tweeted it out, and I totally messed up the number. I thought he was at 112 points scored. He's at 113, and the single season record for kickers is, 1 second, I'm pulling it up, 120 by Phil Dawson back in 2007. But Anthony, he's in striking distance of Jim Brown's single season scoring record of 126 points. Granted, all Jim Brown's were touchdowns, but Dustin Hopkins is at 113. So he could set another single season record for the Browns, and he has been the ultimate weapon. We know how aggressive Kevin Stefanski has been, and he's still aggressive at times. We've seen it on Sunday, obviously with the David Bell touchdown, and, you know, using Harrison Bryant the way he has in those QB sneak packages, although he used Flacco as a QB sneak guy on Sunday. But to have confidence in your kicker and to trust him to go out there and make the kicks the way Dustin Hopkins has, obviously he hasn't been perfect, missed a couple extra points, missed a couple field goals, but he gives you confidence that he's going to go out there and get the job done and execute his kicks. And he has done that this year, obviously leads the league in field goals. I think he leads the league in scoring, or he's pretty close to it. But the fact that we traded a 7th round pick for him on cut down day, and he has gone out and set records at, you know, surpassing Phil Dawson, Lou Groza, Matt Stover, guys that were legendary kickers in Browns franchise history. That was a great trade by Andrew Berry. And I think if this team wasn't, you know, in playoff Super Bowl contention the way they were, we probably still would have had Cade York, and we probably would have been screaming at the top of our lungs on this podcast to make the change. But I think Barry, Stefanski, Bubba Ventrone knew that they cannot go into the season with Cade York, and that's why they made the trade. and made the decision to cut a draft pick, which I'm sure was tough on Barry and Dee Podesta and everybody, but they did it and it keeps paying dividends. And I think it'll continue to pay dividends the rest of the regular season and into the playoffs as well.
Oh, absolutely. And he is actually 16 points behind Brandon Aubrey of Dallas in terms of points for the year. Aubrey has 30 made field goals, but he has 39 extra points. So, but you know, just going back to the Browns record here, and how crazy is it? You know, Jim Brown had 126 points. That's 21 touchdowns in one season. So,
yeah,
that's just an impressive feat. But yeah, you know, we're very thankful for Hopkins, what he's been able to do this season. Just have the confidence as a fan when he goes out there, you feel like, you know, 9 times out of 10, he's going to make whatever kick that he's lining up for. And before this year, it was not that, to say the least. So to be at a position where they're at right now is a very good thing with Dustin Hopkins. And I think we should give some credit to Bjorquez as well for the game on Sunday, because he flipped the field a few times, and you know, just the leg that he has, and it was really helped the Browns out in a few different situations this past Sunday with some of the punts that he was able to get off.
Yeah, he's been, that's another one, because there was Browns fans saying that Bjorquez was the reason why Cade Yord was struggling. And I don't think that's apparent now, because there hasn't been any holding issues with Hopkins, with Bjorquez, but you know, to see what he's done punting the ball, I think he's pretty close. There's a franchise. I think he's got the franchise record currently as things stand for yards per punt. He's definitely been a great weapon, another great weapon for the Browns this year. He's fourth in yards per punt this year in the league. He has flipped the field a pretty good amount this year. So he's been phenomenal as well. I just think that special teams unit has been, it's been a complete 180 what has happened to see what it was last year, obviously with Cade Yord struggling, the coverage units were terrible. To get Bubba Ventrone, which was amazing, we got him when we did, because obviously he wanted to leave Indy because they weren't taking him serious as a head coaching candidate. Which, I mean, Shane Steichen's done a great job for them. I think Bubba's going to get his shot sooner than later. But to see what he's been able to do with that unit, even though there was some criticism at the beginning of the year, to see what they've done in terms of coverage, kicking and punting, I think the return game, at least the punt return game, has been improved under Bubba Ventrone's watch. But to see all those guys out there going out and doing their job, Stefanski always says, all three phases have to help win this team win. And on Sunday, that was definitely apparent, because if it wasn't for Hopkins and Bjorquez going out there and doing their job, it could have been a different result for the Browns as well.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this game here, before we move on to the injuries, let's talk about the Dogland, or the Mayor of Dogland poll question that we put out. So on X, we put out the options of it being Joe Flacco, David Njoku, Martin Emerson, and David Bell. 59% of the fans picked Joe Flacco, 27, Martin Emerson, David Njoku, 13, and David Bell got 1%. Jack, who did you pick as the mayor of Dogland for the victory on Sunday?
I went with Martin Emerson just because I thought, you know, as much as him and Njoku, I think, to set the tone for the game early with those two single-handedly helping the Browns get out to that early lead by what they did on their sides of the ball. But at the same time, it does not surprise me that Joe Flacco won this poll in a landslide. He, as Ken Carmen put, this town has Flacco fever. And if you would have told me that like 5 years ago, or even 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I would have been like, what are you on? And I may potentially want some. So not a surprise that Flacco fever swept the poll as well. And with good reason, because Joe Flacco has been phenomenal these last 2 weeks for the Browns.
Yeah, well, we had Flacco fever a different way, because every time we played him, he made us sick. especially last year, you know, with the Jets game. So Yeah. But, you know, I pick Flacco, and I just think to for him to go out there on Sunday to have the game that he did, you know, he joined a very small list of Browns quarterbacks to throw for 300 yards and 3 passing touchdowns in a game. It's only happened. Since 1990, a Browns quarterback has done that. The most recent being last year, Jacoby Brissett did it. Baker did it 3 times between 18 and 20. And then you have to go all the way back to 2013 when Brian Hoyer, Brandon Whedon, and Jason Campbell all did it in the span of a couple months. So it's definitely been a long time since, you know, we see that statistic. We don't see it very often. So for that reason, I gave it to Joe Flacco.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you couldn't go wrong with any of the choices. I put David Bell in there just because he put the game, almost the game ceiling touchdown there. But I mean, if we would have picked Njoku, it wouldn't surprise me either, because I think that was one of his better games as well, for sure. But Flacco deserved it, definitely.
All right. So unfortunately, after all this wonderful talk that we've had on this podcast, we kind of got to bring it down a little bit because we do have some injury news to discuss. First off, DeJuan Jones sustained a different injury in practice on last Thursday and will miss the remainder of the regular season. Jedrick Wills, who potentially was coming back from his injury that he sustained, will not return this season. He has also been placed on IR. There is talk that Grant Delpit, who just signed a brand new extension with the Browns Sunday morning before the game, as reported by Brad Saybrook of the OBR, he signed a 3-year deal, $36 million, $23 million of that guaranteed. He has a groin injury that could make him a candidate for IR. The Browns placed Maurice Hurst and his wonderful sack celebration on IR. I think that's one of the things I'm most bummed about, not being able to see that celebration. So, Jack, you know, we've had a lot of discussions about next man up. They're running out of next man ups to put out there with all these injuries, but it just seems like where there's a will, where there's a way. And I think that this team will still continue to be as competitive as it possibly can, despite losing all of these different guys to injuries.
Yeah, man. It's just, it's been like, it's, I feel numb to it now. Every time I see like Browns plays, blah, blah, blah on injured reserve, or Browns player, insert name here, has to undergo season ending surgery. Like, it's just been one after the other. Cody Swick of the OBR posted earlier today, you look at the number of players that are on IR with season-ending injuries. It started with Jakeem Grant at the last preseason game. Then it was Jack Conklin week one, Nick Chubb week two. We lost Deshaun Watson to season-ending surgery. Jacob Phillips, obviously, he's had to go through his trials and tribulations throughout his Browns tenure. Rodney McLeod, who was one of the leaders on the defense. All those guys are out. Now DeJuan Jones, now Jed Wills, who we were kind of hoping would come back just because James Hudson has been a nightmare at right tackle. We've lost Denzel Ward for some time, Juan Thornhill for some time, Marquise Goodwin. Now you lose Mo Hurst to the torn pec. And that one hurt the worst because, like you, I love the belly rub dance. But he's been a bright spot on that defensive line. He was having a resurgent season. Was hoping the Browns re-sign him. Maybe they still do in the offseason, just so he could rehab here. He's comfortable with his surroundings, his teammates, and he knows he could be effective in Jim Schwartz's defense. But all these injuries, they hurt. But at the same time, and then you mentioned potentially Delpit having to go on IR. It's been next man up all season. You know, in terms of the D-tackle room, Jordan Elliott has a concussion. He might be out this week. They're going to have to, I think we're finally going to see Siaki Ika, the team's 3rd-round pick. They probably call up Tommy Togiai, who was the Browns' 4th-round pick a couple years ago. They try to fill in the gaps with Shelby Harris and The other guys in that room, Dalvin Tomlinson, the offensive line, Jaron Christian's been playing well at left tackle. You know, James Hudson is a liability, but the Browns have been adding guys who spent time with San Francisco because of the scheme fit with Stefanski's offense and Bill Callahan's offensive line schemes. But I mean, it's going to be tough, but like I said, it's always next man up. We've come this far this season, the Browns have, and I just don't expect any quit. I think they're just going to keep going. There's still solid veteran leadership in that locker room on every level of the defense. And I just think these coaches are going to get them ready. The veterans on the roster are going to get these guys ready. If we have to see Ronnie Hickman or, you know, Cam Mitchell, Daron Harmon's on the practice squad. So if Delpa has to go down, I think Daron Harmon can fill that Rodney McLeod void in terms of veteran leadership. He spent a long time with New England. So with the Browns going to the playoffs, he's a good guy to have in that locker room. I don't expect this team to quit. I mean, they have had everything thrown at them this year in terms of injuries, adversity. This team is still 8-5. That's kudos to the front office, the coaching staff, the veterans on the team. I mean, Joe Flacco was on the street 3 weeks ago, Anthony, and now he's starting. He's had two good games. Obviously, the Rams game didn't go as well, but there is a fight in this team. It fits Cleveland to a T, and I don't expect any quit just because of these injuries, even though on the surface they look like they hurt. But it's always been next man up, and they're just going to keep rolling and until the wheels can completely come off, and hopefully they don't come off until late January, early February.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just going to continue to feed into the underdog thing because nobody's going to give them a chance if they make the playoffs, especially, you know, playing one of these higher seeded teams. If, you know, the wild card is where they end up with all of these injuries, you know, that they've had. So it's just, you're right, it's next man up. There's a toughness mentality. I love that Andrew Berry used the term badassery in Grant Delpit's extension quote that he put out. So, you know, this team is definitely something different. And, you know, hopefully these last four games go our way majority of the time. And, you know, they're able to get into the postseason for the first time in a few years. You know, I'm glad we're not saying for the first time in like 20 years anymore. So, you know, hopefully they're able to get to the postseason. And hey, you get into the postseason, you know, you could beat a team on any given Sunday. And we saw how close they got to Kansas City a few years ago, you know, in that game. And right now, that's all you can ask for is to get to the playoffs and, you know, play a competitive game. And if they were to get there, Jack, I bet you it will be a competitive game no matter who they play.
Oh, definitely. They right now it'll be a rematch against Jacksonville, but depending on how seeding goes, they could play Miami, which that'll be an interesting matchup. Our defense against their high powered offense, which is starting to, there's some cracks in it with injuries starting to pile up down in Miami. It's the 2 seed. They could play Kansas City. I mean, they could play Baltimore. I think whoever they end up playing in the wild card round, it's going to be a fight and it's going to be a competitive matchup. But I also think just because of how upside down the AFC has been all season, I feel like the Browns can play anybody. They're 6-3 against teams with a winning record this year. That's second best winning percentage in the league. So, you know, despite all the flaws the Browns have had this year, they have proven that when they face, you know, above average competition, they go toe to toe with anybody in the league. So I think when you get to the playoffs, all hands are on deck, all bets are off. And I think the Browns could go against anybody in this AFC.
Well, I'll put it this way. The Browns, as it currently stands, have beaten the top seed in both the AFC and NFC this year. So take that for what you will in terms of, you know, beating Baltimore and beating the 49ers this season. So we'll see how it goes. We'll definitely be here. I promise we'll be here more to talk.
Yep.
You know, hopefully I start to feel better. I've been struggling through this podcast, coughing and muted myself. Hopefully it hasn't come through too much, but hopefully, Jack, you're feeling better. I know the holiday.
I'm getting there.
I know the holidays are coming up, so it's just a crazy time for everybody. I appreciate. We both appreciate everybody who listens to us. You know, as you all start to travel, have a safe holiday. We'll be back either on Sunday or Monday for post game with the after the Browns play the Bears on Sunday at 1 o'clock. So with all that, we are going to get on out of here. Be sure to follow Jack and me on Twitter. Jack at JackMcCurry08, me at Anthony Jokey. The Dogland on Facebook, Twitter, X, Instagram, Threads, all that fun stuff, all at the same handle, The Dogland. Take care of yourselves. Have a very good holiday. And remember, most importantly, go Browns.